Hi, this is Newt. Because of the coronavirus, I am currently staying at home in Rome, where my wife serves as the United States Ambassador to the Holy See. She's leading the embassy in dealing with all the different changes being brought about by the pandemic. To bring you this episode this week, I'm recording from my home, so you may notice a difference in audio quality. On this episode of Newt's World, this episode is the third in a series of episodes we're presenting about COVID-19 healthcare breakthroughs. We're looking at innovations in healthcare that will help improve patient outcomes. With advancements in technology, at-home recovery care provides an alternative to acute care medicine by providing hospital-level care in patients' homes through the use of telehealth, in-home nursing visits, and virtual visits by a physician. Based on clinical studies, hospital equivalent care can be delivered in home more effectively, both clinically and financially, and patients prefer to be treated at home instead of the hospital. This model of home hospitalization can improve patient outcomes, reduce the cost of care, and support hospitals as they respond to COVID-19. I'm pleased to welcome my guest, Travis Messina, co-founder and CEO of Contessa Home Recovery Care. Travis Messina is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Contessa Home Recovery Care. I want to start, Travis, by asking you to talk a little bit about your own journey and how you got to be the CEO for Contessa Home Recovery Care. Have you always been interested in healthcare, or what's the background that got you here?
I came from a family of clinicians, had nurses, physicians, social workers in my family. I pursued a career in investment banking. At one point, I was actually coming back from a meeting with a partner from the investment bank where I worked, and we had pitched some operators of hospitals. And the partner looked at me and said, you know, if you were smart, you would go and work for one of those teams so that you can actually help change the healthcare industry. So I wasn't sure if it meant I was either a bad banker or he was truly looking out for my best interest. So at that point, I then went to a company called Vanguard Health, which operated 28 hospitals in 5 states, and started working on models that help change the traditional delivery form of healthcare.
Why did you think the time was right to begin changing the model of healthcare?
So while we were at Vanguard, we were a bit unique in that we were an integrated delivery system. And by that, I mean we not only owned and operated the hospitals and outpatient clinics and the communities in which we operated, but we also owned the insurance plans. And so we were responsible for financing the cost of healthcare. And by having that responsibility, we were trying to find the most effective ways to render care at the lowest possible cost while not jeopardizing the quality or the patient satisfaction. You have to look to new models of care so that you can improve the outcomes and still do it in a sustainable cost model. If you look at the healthcare system, $3 trillion is spent in the United States. $1 trillion of that is in hospital care. A lot of focus was placed on how do you prevent patients from presenting to the hospital, and how do you reduce that utilization of hospital services? And I noticed this glaring gap that no one was focused on. How do you come up with a different way to render hospital level care? Historically, everything has been focused upon preventing that hospitalization. But I thought if you could figure out another way to render equivalent care that you could receive in the hospital, and you could do so at a lower cost, well, then you could greatly improve the system. And so I started doing a tremendous amount of research in that area and found this model called hospital at home that had largely been operated in single payer countries, had great clinical outcomes, and there had been some limited pilots or research studies in the United States, but it always failed to scale because there was never this reimbursement mechanism. So trying to find that opportunity where you could reduce the cost of something that now equates to, you know, roughly 20% of our GDP, but still give patients a great outcome was highly appealing to me because it presented a great challenge and could obviously do great for the community.
You experimented with this, you learned about it at Vanguard, but then you went to Contessa. Now, how did Contessa grow up?
So while we were at Vanguard, we were in the process of trying to launch a model that's similar to what Contessa operates today. We call it home recovery care. It's best known as hospital at home. Johns Hopkins is credited with, for lack of a better description, inventing the model in the United States about 25 years ago. So we had done research and we were trying to come up with new ways to deliver high quality care. At that time, a group of the team members from Vanguard and myself decided, let's go off and start a company with the explicit purpose of trying to make this hospital at home or home recovery care model a standalone business. At that point, I did the proverbial entrepreneurial track where I quit my job and went into an office by myself and started writing the business plan. And then ultimately, you know, in January of 2015, founded Contessa.
As you're thinking through this model, what's the source of how you designed it?
I looked at a combination of outcomes from various sources, primarily the research from Johns Hopkins and Mount Sinai. And then I combined that with the scalable impact, I would say, of Australia. So Australia probably has the greatest amount of patients treated in a similar model. Roughly 7 to 10% of the patients in Australia that need hospital-level care receive that care in a hospital-at-home equivalent model. I was looking to how do you achieve a scalable state? Because if you want to be successful in changing clinical practice patterns, you have to be able to apply that model to a significant number of patients. It's hard to ask a clinician or a health system to change its workflows if they can only apply that model to a subset of the population. So Australia was sort of the bellwether, if you will. Then in looking at the most important outcomes was related to the quality outcomes. Johns Hopkins and Mount Sinai had exceptional research related to their efforts. So I took the combination of those three sources to state, how do you create a clinical model that produces an equivalent outcome from a quality perspective, and now use that as the foundation to create a business model such that it could be sustainable in the United States reimbursement or healthcare system.
Is there any cultural difference between Australians and Americans that makes it different to design the system, or are they actually pretty transferable?
I think probably the biggest cultural difference is just the reimbursement model as a whole. By and large, a significant number of hospital operators today still function under a fee-for-service reimbursement model. If you're reimbursed for treating a patient, how do you willingly take a patient that you could admit to your hospital and send them home and render care outside of that setting? I think that that's probably the biggest cultural difference.
Ultimately, will it make sense for every hospital to have a home recovery care relationship?
To be completely honest, I do not think that that's the case, because we think of home recovery care much like a service line initiative of a health system or a hospital. So certain hospitals are very good at specific service lines. But I think much like health systems have areas of expertise, certain health systems and hospitals will have home recovery care as an area of expertise, but not all hospitals will find it necessary to do so.
Are there particular disease states that are better adapted to home recovery care and other disease states that are much less desirable for home recovery care?
Absolutely. If you think about complications associated with general medical conditions, those are the types of patients that we're targeting for home recovery care treatment. If you think of a hospital, you have the intensive care unit, you have a step-down unit, and then you have what's referred to as the med-surg unit. We are targeting those patients that would be going to a general medical bed on the med-surg unit. So complications associated with congestive heart failure, COPD, pneumonia, cellulitis, diverticulitis, dehydration, asthma. Conditions like that are best suited to be treated in home recovery care. And when you look at what that represents as a percentage of admissions to a hospital, those conditions and all the conditions we treat in home recovery care typically account for about 35 to 40% of all admissions for hospitals.
When you set up a home recovery care system, what has to happen at my home for a home recovery care system to work?
So we have a number of partners across the country. I'll just use Mount Sinai as an example in Manhattan. So we have RNs that are affiliated with Mount Sinai. So they are wearing name badges and lab coats of Mount Sinai, and they are in the emergency rooms of our partner health systems. They are screening patients as they come through the emergency room, and they're trying to identify those patients that are most suitable for home recovery care. When they identify those patients based on the chief complaints that are registered in the ER system, they do three quick screens. One, are they a member of a health plan with which we have a contract? Two, do they meet the clinical criteria to be admitted to a hospital? And three, is their clinical presentation such that they could be safely treated at home? If they quickly pass those three screeners, we then engage a local hospitalist that's employed by Mount Sinai. The hospitalist is typically responsible for admitting patients to the floor, so we wanted to keep that workflow intact. He or she would come down and review the chart because it is a physician-driven model. Ultimately, he or she has the decision to admit the patient to home recovery care. If they agree, there's a conversation with the patient at the bedside in the emergency room that says, as a Mount Sinai patient, you're eligible to receive this care at home through our home recovery care program. We're going to send nurses to your home. You're going to receive a telehealth visit by a physician. Would you like to enroll in our program? Because of EMTALA, you can't force the patient into the program. You have to give them the option. If they agree, we do a fourth screener, which is a health and home assessment, which is a verbal survey to make sure that that environment is suitable, not only for the patient to receive care, but also for the caregivers that are going into the home. At that point, if they need any treatments, they would receive it in the emergency room, and then we transport the patient to the home, typically via ambulance or a non-emergency transport service. Once the patient is in their home, we send RNs, registered nurses, to the home at least twice a day. If they need more visits, we'll send a nurse out as many times as necessary. And once a day, while the nurse is at the bedside of the patient in the home, a hospitalist will round on that patient virtually using a telehealth kit that we send home with the patient. So this enables the physician to see all the vital signs of a patient and enables them to have an audio and visual communication with them. There's a virtual stethoscope that allows the nurse to move in accordance where the physician needs to hear, for instance, auscultations of heart and lungs. The nurse will carry out lab draw services. They'll do plain film imaging. They'll do infusion services, and they'll help administer any durable medical equipment such as oxygen. And when that physician deems the patient ready for discharge, and I'll put that in quote because the patient is already in the home, they then move into what we call a monitoring phase, whereby we follow up with that patient until the 30th day from when they were admitted to the program to make sure that they're getting on that path to recovery, making sure that they're getting in to see their primary care physician. If they need to see a specialist, we can arrange for them to get those visits, and we help them get the transportation as necessary. So we create a comprehensive, holistic approach to care as opposed to the traditional episodic care that has been rendered in the traditional hospital setting.
What is the advantage of accepting your home recovery care option rather than just going into the hospital bed?
So I think first and foremost, and especially given what we're experiencing with COVID-19, you're not susceptible to other potential infections. When you're in a hospital, nurses and doctors are going from patient to patient. There is a higher propensity for viruses or infections to be transferred to another patient. Secondly, you're in an unfamiliar environment. The majority of our patients are geriatric patients. And so when they wake up in the middle of the night and they need to use the restroom, they're not familiar with that setting. When you're in your home environment, you're around your own germs, for lack of a better description. You don't have the chance to get a hospital-acquired infection when you're in your home. And you know the layout. You know where your nightstand is. You know where the corner of your bed is. And you don't have those falls and those accidents that happen in unfamiliar environments. And the studies released by Mount Sinai and Johns Hopkins support that evidence that you do have a higher quality outcome because you're in that familiar, safe environment. You're also ambulating much quicker because when you're in the hospital, you're sitting in that bed for the significant majority of the day. Whereas when you're at home, you have a higher propensity to ambulate and move about your house. And so you get back on that path to recovery much quicker than you would in the hospital while you sit in the bed.
But why doesn't that increase the likelihood of your falling?
Because, again, you're in a familiar environment, and you typically have spousal support or family support.
Do you move in whatever equipment we're going to need? How does that work?
So when we transport that patient home from the emergency room, we do send them home or we arrange for the equipment to be delivered to the home. The biggest misconception is that you do need a hospital bed. We actually do not send hospital beds into the home. It's perfectly acceptable to use their own bed. But it is a part of that health and home assessment to make sure that everything is suitable for them. but we do send in equipment. The most typical equipment is our oxygen tanks. Sometimes we need walkers to help them assist with that ambulation that I described.
So you're really describing a very high percentage of the people who are getting home recovery care are probably retired and probably on Medicare.
Most of our patients are enrolled in Medicare Advantage health plans. I think one of the bigger challenges of home recovery care is the fact that Medicare does not reimburse for the model. So if you're a straight Medicare fee-for-service beneficiary, this program cannot be available to you because it's not currently reimbursed by CMS.
If you come in at a lower cost than treating the same person in the hospital, why wouldn't it be to Medicare's advantage to, at a minimum on a break-even basis, pay you as long as you're not more expensive than the hospital?
I think it would be an exceptional idea for Medicare to reimburse for the program.
Do the hospitals themselves oppose it, or is it just bureaucratic inertia?
I think it's just the regulatory challenges. The reimbursement mechanism for hospitals has always been a hospital submits a DRG, which is a diagnosis-related group, for reimbursement from Medicare. Now you're talking about rendering hospital-level care, but it's in the home. So we've actually proposed to CMS that they use the bundled payment reimbursement mechanism, which we think that that's a great idea because it promotes higher quality care at a lower cost.
Given the Trump administration's bias in favor of innovation and desire to reduce costs, I would think that this is a very, very real opportunity to create a better outcome at lower price.
I agree. And obviously, with the virus, they have been very receptive to new models.
Given that we seem to believe that COVID-19 is particularly dangerous if you're over 65, there's a pandemic-related reason to encourage people going into this kind of home care recovery system rather than staying in a hospital room.
Hospitals have amazing care, but in certain instances, it's not the best environment for you to receive that care. In addition to the clinical and quality components of the model, you also have the financial components, and that with the aging of America, the baby boomers that are continuously growing, it's creating capacity constraints on a number of health systems across the country. The cost of creating a new bed for a hospital is roughly $2 million. If that hospital operates in a state which requires the certificate of need, it's probably upwards of $3 million. We have a virtual bed like you have with a home recovery care program. It's roughly $19,000 to $20,000 per bed. You're in essence funding the staff that's needed to run the program. So with those significant costs of creating a physical bed, it's just going to further contribute to the increasing cost of healthcare, which is, you know, one of the problems that we have. And so creating a more cost-efficient model, again, without jeopardizing quality, is something that our healthcare industry needs so that, you know, we can create a sustainable, more cost-efficient model.
One of the things that the Trump administration has really been pushing hard is the whole idea of telemedicine. To what extent does that also play into your home recovery model?
It's essential. Without the advent of telehealth or telemedicine, home recovery care wouldn't be successful because it wouldn't be scalable. If you go back to the original research papers, the programs relied upon physicians or clinicians going into the home for a visit, where you need an army of clinicians to be able to treat a credible number of patients. Now that you do have telemedicine capabilities, a physician can do a rounding on a patient virtually. He or she can see the vital sign monitoring no differently than they could see when they were on the hospital floor. That is what makes hospital at home or home recovery care a scalable model. So without telemedicine, we wouldn't be able to scale to the number of health systems or treat the number of patients that we're capable of treating.
Do you bring in the home side portions of the telehealth or telemedicine as part of the contract?
We do. When a patient leaves the emergency room and goes home in our program, they get, for lack of a better description, a small briefcase which contains all the materials for the telemedicine capabilities. It has a tablet, it has a blood pressure cuff, it has a pulse ox monitor, it has a virtual scale and a virtual stethoscope. And so by having those materials in the home, the physician is able to round on that patient while that nurse is at the bedside to see all the vital signs no differently than he or she would see on the floor.
Do you see potentially the beginning of kind of a baseline home health kit that you can imagine would simply be in virtually every home? So you could, in many ways, provide the data online without having to go to the doctor's office.
I do think that that's highly probable. You have a number of retail companies that are trying to do just that.
Are you able to provide this kind of service in very rural areas?
We do. It was critical that we demonstrate the ability to succeed in a rural area because obviously if we want to apply it to Medicare beneficiaries, you have to have that capability. Our first partner was with the Marshfield Clinic in Marshfield, Wisconsin, which is rural Wisconsin. It's a town of about 18,000 people. And their service area is about 30,000 square miles. You have people driving hours into the Marshfield Clinic.
Right.
And Dr. Turney, the CEO, and Dr. Morali realized that they had to create a better way to render hospital-level care to their community. Just as you described, it's a better experience. If we can bring that to their home in a rural setting, then we're highly capable of doing it in more urban areas like New York and Phoenix and Nashville.
If you have large high-rise buildings, and you can help particularly senior citizens get the care they need without having to expose themselves to all of the germs in the elevator and all the germs in the subway, et cetera, there's some huge advantages both to telemedicine and also to this home recovery model in terms of protecting people.
If you look at the fact that everyone has been talking about flattening the curve and sheltering in place, and home recovery care enables patients to continue to shelter in place and still receive that care. So as the COVID crisis started, we're partnered with Mount Sinai, and we had that firsthand experience in New York. And so we started by treating patients that had tested negative for COVID-19. And so we were taking them when they presented to the health system and make sure that they stayed at home so that they wouldn't have that exposure to the virus. We then quickly moved to treating patients that had tested positive for COVID-19 because of the fact that there were just so many cases. They needed to free those beds at Mount Sinai for higher acuity patients. But still, even though they had tested positive, we were keeping that patient confined to their home, and they were able to prevent from being out in the community and obviously further contribute to the spread. So I think, you know, benefits can be seen on both sides of the equation with that capability of treating patients in the home.
You actually have a dramatically lower readmission rate than people who stay in the hospital. Can you talk about that?
That's right. We track a number of quality metrics. Probably the one that we're most proud of achieving are, first and foremost, as you mentioned, the readmission rate, or specifically the reduction in readmission rate, but also the patient satisfaction for the program. Because those patients are in the home and they're in that familiar environment and they are able to be around their family and not be exposed to those complications that can be generated in a hospital, we have been able to reduce that readmission significantly, 44% reduction to the baseline readmission rate. The care team is interacting with that patient numerous times throughout their home recovery care experience. So through a hospital equivalent experience on the telehealth side, they really do get on that path to recovery much quicker.
So you have a shorter length of stay for hospital level care, fewer readmissions, and as I understand it, a significant improvement in patient satisfaction.
That's exactly right. We have the equivalent of a 90% satisfaction rate. And I think ultimately, one of the main contributors is that patients historically have not had a choice as it relates to hospital level care. When you need hospital level care, one of two things happens. You're either admitted to the hospital or you leave against medical advice. And now presenting patients with a third option, you're not forcing anything upon them, but you give them that optionality. If you want to receive this care in the home, then you have that right. If you want to go to the hospital, that right is yours as well. When we offer the program to a patient, 93% of the time they enroll.
That's remarkable. Let me ask this, since we're in the middle of a pandemic. If I became a COVID-19 patient, what would potentially be the home recovery model that you would recommend, and how would it work in terms of getting care at home rather than the hospital?
At the outset, we were very cautious as it related to treating COVID-positive patients in a home recovery care model. That was largely due to the fact that this virus was so unknown and the complications that could come about happen in a very quick time frame, that we were very cautious and actually did not target COVID positive patients at the outset. That being said, after a considerable amount of time working with these types of patients in New York with Mount Sinai, we were able to identify patients that had been stabilized. They were not at risk of respiratory failure, to be treated in the home with traditional respiratory treatment. So they would have oxygen, continuous fluids. We're making sure that they're not at risk of pneumonia or respiratory failure. So much like you would treat a patient for pneumonia complications in the hospital, we were doing the same at home. Again, largely through oxygen treatments, monitoring their vital signs to make sure that fluid's not building up in the lungs, all capable of being monitored remotely with telehealth capabilities.
We're working on a project right now. Beyond the pandemic, what's the shape of the health system going to be? What you're doing is clearly a piece of it. And there are a number of other things that you can sort of begin to see as a more dynamic, more decentralized, and more patient-centric system.
It really ultimately comes down to the patient adherence and changing patient behavior, right, such that they engage with that wearable or that device in a consistent manner. When we are able to crack that code, that's when you'll see monumental shifts, I believe, in the outcomes of health, because you will have that continuous engagement with the patient and their overall health.
That's great. You are a great pioneer, and I think you have a piece of the puzzle that could be very helpful for the whole country.
Well, thank you so much for the time and the opportunity. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you to my guest, Travis Messina. You can read more about at-home recovery care as an alternative to acute care medicine on our show page at newtsworld.com. Newts World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers, and our producer is Garnsey Sloan. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penman. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. Please email me with your comments at newt@newtsworld.com. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. On the next episode of Newt's World, as we defeat the virus and start to reopen America, what happens next? I'm joined by Larry Kudlow, who serves as Assistant to the President for Economic Policy and Director of the National Economic Council. He leads the coordination of President Donald J. Trump's domestic and global economic policy agenda. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.